The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur, your host, and I am joined with Isaac Perry. And the last couple of shows, we have focused on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But there's just so much going on right now in the world of Marvel. And we made a couple of preludes to a big release that recently happened, Thor Ragnarok. And Isaac, you've seen Ragnarok.
I have seen Ragnarok.
I have not, because I saw Thor 2, The Dark World, and thought it was garbage, and don't think that Thor works very well as a standalone film. But this is the 18th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's directed by Taika Waititi, and he's known for having a comedic approach, not goofy, but a comedic, lighthearted approach to some of his films. And I think that this was a direct attempt to put a lightheartedness on the Thor franchise.
Well, let me, because and you're not the first person, because I agree with you as far as the second Thor film, The Dark World. It wasn't a good film. I think that there were elements of it that were good, and I think that if you are a if you've been following the MCU, it's definitely worth seeing simply because. Yeah. There's nuggets in there that fit within the whole, you know, this long story that the MCU has been telling since Iron Man 1. So it's definitely worth seeing just if you're a completist and want to get that big picture. And I think there's two after credit sequences, or at least one that features Thanos, which is obviously going to play, you know, heavily into Infinity War in 2018. But for some reason, and you, like I say, you're not the first person I've heard who I've heard say this, but for some reason, Thor 1 is not getting the love that I think it deserves. To me, Thor 1 is probably, you know, it's in my top five MCU movies. You know, Iron Man, the first Iron Man, the first Thor, Captain America, Winter Soldier, the first Avengers. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite films. And, you know, full disclosure, Thor is also, you know, it has been since the 80s, probably my second favorite Marvel character, period. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, Walt Simonson, writer, artist Walt Simonson, kind of did for Thor what Frank Miller did for Batman and Daredevil. Basically, you know, the title, the Thor comic book title. I'm not sure if struggling is the right word, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't at the top of the sales in numbers. It wasn't topping the sales list. But when Walt Simonson took it over, he kind of revamped it and really revolutionized that title. So I started reading it around that time, probably a year or so after his run. And I went back and got some of the issues that he had done. And I, you know, just fell in love with the character of Thor. Which was odd for me. You know, this is a Norse, you know, Norse god. I, you know, didn't know anything about Norse mythology. Wasn't really into any of the Greek gods or any of that type of mythology. But just something about what Simonson did for this character kind of captured my imagination. So I really dug it. And if you look at the first Thor movie, I think what I can never pronounce his name.
Kenneth Branagh.
What he did with the first Thor movie, he directed the first Thor movie, and
yeah,
what he did, I think, was monumental. He captured, you know, the power, the humility, not only of Thor but of Asgard, just this, you know, otherworldly, literally this otherworldly place. What Anthony Hopkins did in the role of Odin, what Loki, Tom Hiddleston did in the role of Loki. Even Idris Elba is Heimdall. I mean, it was that film is incredible to me as a comic book movie. And I think that even the first fight the major first fight scene in that movie between Thor and the Warriors 3 and the Frost Giants is one of my favorite, you know, on-screen comic book, you know, fights of all time. So I don't think that movie gets the credit it deserves. I think it's been kind of glossed over, and the kind of the narrative is that, oh, well, the Thor movies aren't that good, and Thor is just not that interesting of a character by himself. So I beg to disagree with anybody who says that. I think that first Thor movie stands apart from many of the movies in the MCU. But on to Thor Ragnarok.
So far, the reviews that I've seen, fans are calling Ragnarok the funniest and most unique MCU film to date.
If I had to put it in one sentence or a few words, I would say that, and I'm like you know, the hype that surrounded Thor Ragnarok for the last year has been pretty big. When it was first, like the first set images that came out, I think was in the fall or the winter of 2016. And you saw that Taika Waititi was going to go a completely different direction. It was very bright, very colorful. It just looked completely different than the first two Thor movies, and it looked different than pretty much anything else in the MCU. And then when the first, you know, teaser trailer came out and the first actual trailer came out, and it was like, wow, you know, what is this going to be? Because, you know, if you looked at some of the other films that Taika did, you got an idea of, you know, his sensibilities. And it was clear that he was going to bring those sensibilities to Thor. It wasn't going to be a situation where he was going to, you know, change his style of movie making to fit some type of superhero mold that had been handed to him by Kevin Feige or anybody else at Marvel. It was obvious that he was going to bring his sensibilities and try to figure out a way to make that work within, you know, the Marvel story structure. So yeah, all that hype, you know, happened, and then, you know, those trailers, and it was like, oh, the Hulk is in this movie, and, you know, they're going to be funny, and it's just like, what is going on? I came out of that movie thinking it was more style than substance. And when I say style, I mean that movie was more so, it was beautiful. It was very vivid, very almost psychedelic. It looked like an 80s comic book. When you open up the 80s comic book, either the Walt Simonsons or even before that, the 70s and the 60s, the Fantastic Fours and the Kirby's, the Kirby-esque colors, and just, it had that kind of vibe to it. And that was, you know, that's different than what you see now, especially if you look at the DCEU, what they're doing. They're even darker. Their color palette is even darker than what Marvel is doing. So it just had a much different visual impact from, you know, the first or two or three scenes of the movie. You got a different impact. So I was, you know, knocked over by the visual. I was impressed by the risks that Taika took in telling the story the way that he told it. It was a joke every, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. The characterization of Thor and Hulk and Bruce Banner and, you know, some of the other characters that you had met in previous films, they were much more loose, you know. And it's not to say that in previous films, Thor didn't crack jokes or no one could, you know, because that's completely untrue, especially with when you talk about the Avengers or you talk about Tony Stark as Robert Downey Jr. has portrayed him. There's always been a lot of humor in the MCU, but this was clearly them. It's almost like a action comedy is basically what it is. But in terms of storytelling and narrative, I didn't feel as if there was much of that in the film, meaning from frame one to the last frame, you know, what really changed? What was the story arc? I felt that I understood what they were going for, or what they, you know, what I could kind of see. Well, maybe that's the story arc, you know, maybe it was this or maybe it was that. And I felt like it was the realization by Thor and to some extent, but Loki, that what Asgard really means to them, and what their father's, the lessons that their father has taught them really means to them. And it's not necessarily tied to Asgard as a place, but it's more so about what they carry within them as a people. But that was, you know, that was explicitly stated in a couple lines of dialogue. But other than that, there wasn't really much to this movie. There really wasn't much substance. It was basically Thor, you know, finding himself in these situations and fighting his way out of them. And there was some really great lines of dialogue. There were some really funny moments. There were some, a couple of memorable characters, but it more so felt to me like a episode of a television show, mm-hmm. a television show with an enormous budget, you know, of course, but it didn't feel like a cinematic narrative to me.
Do we find out what happened to Odin? At the end of the Dark World, Thor 2, we find that Loki has disguised himself as Odin and has a conversation with Thor.
Mm-hmm.
The result being that Thor has rescinded the throne of Asgard, and Loki now is sitting on the throne.
Right.
But you know, you don't know what happened to Odin.
Right. And see, and that's one of the things that bothered me. That was a big deal at the end of Thor 2. You know, that reveal,
right.
you know, what Loki had done. And, you know, Loki being the god of mischief, of course, you know, Tom Hiddleston has played him perfectly. You know, it's, you always know he's going to get into some shit. You know, it's like something is going to, no matter where mm-hmm. the story is going, you know, at the end of it, Loki is going to do something to either betray Thor or to undermine him or to seek his own glory or whatever. That's just who he is. So at the end of Thor 2, yeah, that was a big deal. And I remember prior to the release of Thor Ragnarok, there were some, I don't know if they were leaked or Marvel had released them officially, but there were some stills from the film with like Odin in New York City, kind of dressed as a bum and this, that. So we were like, okay, this movie is going to really dive into what happened to Odin and what's he been mm-hmm. going through since then. And I got to say, they did, to answer your question, they explained, you know, where Odin has been and what Loki has been up to since then. But it's treated very loosely. It's gloss. It's you know, that information is given within a few quick scenes. And it's just not, there's no gravity to it at all. It's just like, oh, you know, he took over and he's been, you know, playing around and Odin's been on some, you know, he had Odin trapped in a spell and he's been on Earth and ha, ha, ha. And it was like, well, wait a minute. That's, you know, that was a big issue. That was a big deal.
Do you think that could be because maybe Waititi's directorial scope is maxed out to tell that kind of story? Because to tell that kind of story, you obviously need to direct Anthony Hopkins, and he is not a lightweight actor.
Mm-hmm. You know what?
So I would think as a director, you need to really mine that kind of talent.
Well, in this instance, I think the issue starts with the script, even before you mm-hmm. actually get to directing Anthony Hopkins. And I, you know, who knows how many revisions the script went through, but what ended up on screen, there was no space given to that part of the storyline. It was treated, okay. it was one and done. It was like, oh, this is what happened. Boom. Aha. You know, here's Loki, you know, imitating or portraying Odin. Oh, let's go mm-hmm. find where Odin is. I mean, the first, I would say 30 minutes of this film, bro, is like, it's like an episode, like an old school episode of Law and Order. Law and Order used, the original Law and Order was known, was kind of infamous for having more scenes per episode than any other show. You know, it was like they would just go boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom, and it'd just be like scene, scene, scene. And it worked for them because of the structure of that show. The beginning of this Thor movie of Ragnarok is the same way. It's like scene, 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 and it cuts very quickly. And oh, boom, he's talking to Doctor Strange. This happened, that happened, boom. Now he's talking to Odin. They're in Norway. Now that it just, you just, mm-hmm. you can't really get invested. And it's a 2 hour and I think 10 minute film. It's not a short movie, but at the first 30 minutes, you can't really get invested too much in what's going on because everything is kind of happening so quickly. So to your point, I'm not sure it's a directorial problem on set. I think it was a script issue. I just think that the story they were trying to tell needed to give more space to those, you know, things that we were kind of anticipating, of what happened. But, you know, to me, comedy and drama do not have to be mutually exclusive. You know, they can live in the same place. If you look at the first right. Iron Man movie, the first Iron Man movie was funny as hell. You know?
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. is, you know, and I think that gets glossed over. If you look at the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, of course, was funny as hell. But mm-hmm. once Guardians of the Galaxy came out, they're like, oh, you know, Marvel's making comedies now. And they forgot how, people forgot how funny the first Iron Man movie was. So there's room to me for both of these things. I just think Taika's, the sensibility that he brought to it, I think was needed. I dug it. I liked what he was going for. but it was putting, to me, it was putting too much style over substance of storytelling. I mean, for instance, The Warriors 3, you got, you know, Sif. Sif, I don't even think is in the movie. I'm not even sure. And they never explain where she is.
Really?
Yeah, you see
Because, I mean, there was like there was a building love triangle that was happening in the dark world between Sif and Jane and Thor.
Right. And you know, historically, canonically speaking, you know, Sif is heavily tied into Thor. They've been lovers, you know, at times, many a time. So she's a major part of his story. But I don't, to my knowledge, unless I missed it somehow, I don't believe they even explained her absence. Mm-hmm. But you know, Vandrill, Hogan, and the big guy—I forgot the big guy's name—they get, you know, I think Hogan gets a little bit more weight put to his you know, his demise. But these other characters are dealt with, you know, in seconds, and there's not a moment of grief from Thor. There's nothing. You know, a lot of people get killed in this movie for it to be a comedy. And there's really, you know, no type of moment where you see, oh, what's, you know, how is that impacting Thor or Asgard or whatever. It's just, it's odd that way. So I think that the style of this movie, kind of didn't make enough space for the actual storytelling to get done. Now on the bright side, speaking of death, Hela, Cate Blanchett was excellent. I thought she, I thought her character, her portrayal of that character, came off really well. Now, you know, I tried to go back to remember Hela as she is in the comic books. I don't think she was quite as powerful as she in the comics as she is in this movie. I mean, she's on a whole nother level of powerful in this film. But you know, her Cate Blanchett's portrayal of her and her place in this movie, I thought was really good. So I really enjoyed that.
Going back to story and how the MCU is tied together. So, Thor at the end of the Dark World, in the credits, there's a segment where Sif and my man Big Guy give an Infinity Stone to the Collector, mm-hmm. Benicio del Toro's character from the Guardians film, and you see how he acquires one.
Right. Okay.
Then you have Thanos, who is at the center of the Guardians film, but is mentioned either directly, both directly and indirectly in Thor films because of this Infinity Stone. So, do you think that the hype that you alluded to earlier, well, that now you didn't even allude to that exists, that the hype around this new Thor film is an anticipation or a desire for fans to really have a bridge using Thor between the Avengers films and bringing the Guardians into the story piece? Because it seems that Thanos is at the center of all of these MCU films. Whether or not the individual characters know about him or not, they're reacting to events that Thanos is at, and these Infinity Stones are at the center of. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, right now in fall of 2017, where the MCU is, it's kind of split. You know, you have, you know, characters like Captain America and Black Widow and Falcon, and you know, some of these characters, most of even Tony Stark, you know, he's in space for a minute, and they all fought the you know, Loki's creatures at the end of the first Avengers movie. They all have some type of sense of, you know, this universe that's out there, and there's, you know, this danger that's lurking out there, but none of them have traveled the stars like Thor has. You know, Thor and the Guardians have literally, you know, been all over the galaxy. You know, they've traveled all around. You know, Thor has been doing it for eons. So these characters have a sense of the universe and the galaxy that, you know, these earthly, you know, heroes do not. So yeah, to your point, they are using them both as a bridge for the audience and for the actual characters to get from what we've seen so far to what we're going to see in Infinity War next year, and possibly even the Avengers film that comes out after that in 2019.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought too, in Guardians, Starkiller, he's part human, part God.
Right. Well, yeah, he used to be until, I don't think at the end of Guardians 2, I think since he, you know, since what happened in that movie, I don't think he's part God anymore. Well, I guess mm-hmm. once a demigod, always a demigod. But yeah, so I mean, these characters, you know, the Guardians, Thor, they're quite different than what you're going to see in, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier. You know, it's a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there is a bit of a bridge that needs to be made there. Now, I'll say this as far as also just, you know, touch on the Hulk, because, you know, leading up to Thor Ragnarok, it was a big, you know, that was part of the marketing. It was going to be kind of like a buddy film between, you know, buddy cop film between, you know, the Hulk and Thor. Mm-hmm. I thought that actually worked, you know, especially kind of in towards the mid mark of the movie, you know, halfway through the film. You really got, you know, you got Thor on this planet that he had gotten, you know, Saj, he was pursuing Hela and got thrown into this, out of the Bifrost, and ended up on this planet, both him and Loki, this kind of like battle planet. And that's where, you know, because you remember at the end of Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, you know, Hulk is in that ship and he's just heading towards mm-hmm. space. And that was the last time we ever saw him. So we didn't know what the hell happened to Hulk. Turns uh-huh. out he ended up on this planet, and Bruce Banner, the Hulk, has basically suppressed Bruce Banner for 2 years. So the Hulk has not reverted back to Banner in 2 years. He's just been Hulk, and he's been on this planet, you know, kicking people's ass, you know, mm-hmm. basically, you know, like Mike Tyson of the whole planet, basically. Mm-hmm. And so he's a celebrity on this planet. So when he and, you know, first of all, the fight between he and Thor was epic. You know, I was highly anticipating that fight. If you remember the fight from the first Avengers, that was one of the best parts of that movie, was the fight between Thor and Hulk. You know, these are two, excuse me, these are the two of the strongest, most powerful characters in the entire Marvel Universe. So whenever they go, you know, head to head, it's always, you know, it's always going to be some shit.
Right.
So
right.
if you, you know, that fight paid off really well in Ragnarok. And then, even more so, the dialogue between Hulk and Thor and just how they interacted with each other was hilarious. You know, it was like, you know, Hulk is just, even though Thor, you know, is probably the only character that can go toe to toe with him, he treats him, you know, like a punk, you know what I'm saying? And it's like mm-hmm. the lines that he throws at Thor are funny.
So wait, when you said that they have dialogue, is Banner having this dialogue?
No, and I'm glad you said that, because that is one thing I think that they haven't done a good job of explaining. If you remember the early scenes, especially like in Avengers and mm-hmm. even his own, the Edward Norton Hulk movie that came out in 2008, Hulk really doesn't talk, and he seems to be unable to.
He grunts.
Yeah, he grunts, and he doesn't seem to be able to control himself at all. But halfway through the Avengers movie, when he shows up in New York, he's just standing, you know, chilling out with him. And it's like, ain't this dude that just went berserk, you know, early on in the film and almost killed Black Widow until Thor showed up? And then in this film, by the time we get to Ragnarok, he's talking, not like, you know, not like I'm talking to you right now, but he forms sentences, gets his point across, basically calls Thor out, you know, tells Thor what he thinks about him. And like I say, mm-hmm. basically treats him like a punk. And that's you know, kind of like camaraderie / adversarial relationship that they have, it pays off in Ragnarok, and it was funny. And then again, like I said, the fight between the two of them was good. So basically, this movie, to me, to wrap it up, it felt like, you know, in the 80s, they still do this now in comic books, they have annuals. You know, every title like will have a annual. So, you know, if you follow mm-hmm. in Spider-Man, you get 12 issues a year or whatever, but then you get the Spider-Man annual. And usually, especially back in the 80s and 90s, what this was a standalone, you know, story, double issue, usually had different artists than and different, maybe even a different writer than it's on the monthly title. But it was kind of like a blowout issue, you know what I'm saying? It's like taking a story and like really diving into it and like, you know, experiment with different things and giving the reader an experience, a standalone experience that's kind of like on another level. I think to some degree, that's what Thor Ragnarok is. It felt like a story that was somewhat connected to the MCU, of course,
yeah.
but was kind of like a standalone and not to some degree, not connected to what any of the Thor stuff that came before it. Although by the end of the film, it has huge implications on Thor's future, as you'll see in the film. But it felt kind of like a big blowout issue. The problem, though, to me was that, again, it was a lot of style, looked great, was funny, very funny in parts, not so much funny in other parts. Some of the, you know, the jokes kind of landed a little flat, and they took it a little too far sometimes. But, you know, some of the other, you know, the other jokes and other moments of humor were hilarious. So it felt very stylish in that regard. But as far as the storytelling and kind of like, okay, what is, you know, when I walk out of that theater, am I, you know, do I want to come back and see this next week? Nah, I walked out thinking, ah, you know, that was okay. I'm good though. You know, I'm good.
Yeah, okay.
The first Thor movie, you got a huge story arc for Thor. You know, he had his power stripped from him by Odin, and he was taught a lesson of humility. And by the end of that film, he learns that lesson, and he loses his brother by the end of that film. So there was it was a lot of emotion in the first Thor movie. In this movie, it just, there's huge ramifications for what, you know, the action that gets set up in the first part of the film. The result of that is huge. You know, I'm not trying to downplay that at all. There are some.
But do you see that in the Thor character now? I mean, is Chris Hemsworth carrying that humility, lessons learned into?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The Thor that you see here, yeah.
So there's continuity.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The Thor that you see in this movie is very different than the Thor in the first half of Thor 1. He's still Thor, you know what I'm saying? He's still like, I'm the most powerful, I'm this, I'm that, you know, I am son of Odin. You know, he's still Thor. But he's much more, you know, he's not an asshole. Because in the beginning of Thor 1, he was kind of an a-hole, but he's not that anymore. So yeah, you definitely see that. And Chris Hemsworth, you know, to his credit, I think that, and you know, if they find a new Thor 5 or 6 years from now and recast him, it's going to be hard for them, because Chris Hemsworth has really carried this character. And I think he's embodied this character perfectly. I don't think you could ask for a better Thor right now. So overall, the film was not, it didn't live up to all my expectations. I wanted it to be better than it was. I was entertained, but I won't, you know, it'll be something I see again, probably, you know, on Blu-ray or streaming when it comes out on Netflix or wherever. But before we go, I would like to say, though, I think that, you know, it does a good job of setting things up, getting you ready for what's going to happen next year. It's kind of, you know, Arthur, it's kind of like a moment, like kind of like a timeout, you know what I'm saying, between, you know, what happened earlier this year and or what happened, was it last year? Yeah, Civil War was last year. What happened in Spider-Man this year? It kind of is like a timeout before we jump into Black Panther, which is going to be, you know, I think pretty serious and pretty much kind of revealing a whole new part of Earth that we haven't seen before with Wakanda. And then you dive right after that, you dive into, you know, Infinity War. So Thor really is kind of like a breather moment where you kind of like laugh and this is cool. You know, it's like, you know, it's not really too serious, whatever, whatever, before some real shit jumps off.
I'm going to close on this. A couple of weeks ago, it was Disney that was negotiating with 20th Century Fox to buy the X-Men property, right? Kevin Feige has done a lot of good work managing all of these properties, all of these characters, because they had a lot of people in these Avengers movies and these standalone films.
Right.
Can you see a scenario where Feige is taking the X-Men and merging them into the MCU?
Right. I'm of mixed emotions about this, and I saw that news. Who knows if the deal actually, you know, ever really happened, but I'm of mixed emotions though, because I feel that having two or three or four different studios own some of these properties and telling them in a different way kind of prevents a monopoly or a storytelling structure that becomes monotonous. In other words, we as the viewers and we as the moviegoers, we kind of get to go see a Logan, you know, that in 2017 that, you know, came out, I think it was in February 2017. We get to go see a movie like that. And then we also get to go see Spider-Man Homecoming a few months later. Logan would never have happened in the MCU. That movie would have, the MCU and Disney would have never done that. That film, a rated R movie of that caliber. So I kind of want these properties to stay, you know, kind of separated within different studios, because it guarantees different types of storytelling. Now, that said, I personally am never going to feel like the MCU is complete until the X-Men are there. Reason being because the X-Men within Marvel Comics are, you know, you can't separate one from the other. You know, it's like Marvel Comics, you got X-Men, you got Avengers, you got Spider-Man, they're all there. And the storytelling, you know, for instance, with Civil War and the comics involved, you know, X-Men, you know, so to have them not show up, you know, in Civil War within MCU, it felt odd. You know, it's like, oh, you know, this is only half of the story. I want to see, you know, Wolverine go against the Hulk. You know, I want to see the Avengers fight the X-Men. You know, I want to see those types of things on screen.
Right.
But will that ever happen? Like, to your point, that's a lot of storytelling. That's a lot of characters. I don't know. I'm kind of, like I said, so I'm kind of a mixed emotions about that. But if Disney does acquire the X-Men, I absolutely think that after this phase of storytelling that we're in right now with the MCU, say after 2019 or 2020, I think they will, you know, Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios will start rolling out X-Men films, and they'll probably reboot it. They'll probably just start from ground zero, mm-hmm. and start some continuity, because Fox has never really had strong continuity. So that's kind of what I expect, but it's early. Who knows if it's going to happen? Disney right now is trying to gangster the entire entertainment universe. So again, I'm kind of a mixed emotions about what they're doing, because from a viewer standpoint, I don't want a monopoly.
This is Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur. I was joined today by Isaac, and you can find us online at snobsonfilm.com. Our Twitter handle and our Instagram handle are both Snobs on Film. See you next show. Shady and the good for broken promises. Some of them scared of the hood, so they only promote the colleges. I'm having problems with excuses, especially when it comes to my money and the contract is exclusive. They selling tickets with your name up and light to shit, but when it's time to pay, they came up with all type of shit. One tried to pay me in marijuana. The crowd was so thin, he blamed Osama and the Twin Tower bombers. In my pocket like a thief, and there ain't no honor. Living all reckless like there ain't no karma. You ain't no punishment, I ain't your mama. I just had to expose the truth like Leonardo da Vinci when he paint Madonna.